I was talking to a guy yesterday. He goes, hey, have you heard about an Ozempic face? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's what's going to happen. Because when you take these medications, these GLP-1 medications, you're going to lose muscle. And as we age, we don't want to lose muscle. And that's the big one, gut paralysis and muscle. So I just want to start with that. But I really want to help, you know, let's just go back to the basic things. And this is why we have the Know Your Numbers handout. And you just take that to your doctor and print it right off our website and give it to them and say, hey, this is, I need to start with these baseline numbers. And then, as you mentioned at the very beginning, is understanding your risk.
Welcome back to another Rest, Eat, Move podcast. It's Matt and Chris in the studio. We've had a couple new podcasts. We'll continue to do it all year in the same format when we can get each other on the same schedule. But today we're going to come back to a topic we continue to talk about, which is Know Your Numbers. A couple different angles today. I'm going to really kind of go at the angle of, what if you're 35 years old? Why would you care about your numbers? And at 67 years old, why would you care about your numbers? And everywhere in between. And I think this is, it comes back to this thing called medical literacy. If you don't know what questions to ask, if you don't know what some numbers mean, it's going to be really hard to ask inquisitive questions. It's going to be hard to make some different changes and take some different actions to get the outcome that you're looking for. And today is really about two parts. Number one is, how do we control our risk? And number two, how do we have different outcomes? And that's what we're going to talk about today. So we're back at it, talking about your favorite thing, Know Your Numbers. Where do you want to begin today?
You asked me this morning, why are we talking about this? I said, because I get these calls every week. And for some reason, our society needs to be more in tune. I mean, whether, you know, again, I was listening to a podcast the other day and they're talking about Ozempic and everybody's got it now. And even they have a term now called Ozempic face, which is a really withdrawn face when people are losing weight very quickly and all these new medications. In fact, Costco is now, will be offering Ozempic in their stores. And, you know, now they're predicting that it's going to be on Amazon and it's going to cost $1,000 to $1,500 a month. And, you know, it's causes muscle wasting. People will lose muscle, they'll lose weight, gut paralysis. But as a society, again, there's a real attraction to that because you don't have to do a lot. You really don't have to do anything. You're just going to lose weight by taking this medication. So we just need to be more educated in all this stuff, including the Know Your Numbers and how do you keep score.
What's the criteria to get Ozempic? What do you need? A pulse? A doctor note?
Now you can. They're going to be doing telehealth. So,
telehealth going to be?
They're going to have a video that you watch to educate you on
risks,
just the risk and the effects. But yeah, so it's going to be very automated, and so it's going to be very profitable. You're going to pay for this video.
But is it just weight based? Are they going to do a genetic test? Because now it's genetic issue.
Again, it started with diabetes, type 2 diabetes, but now it's moved obviously into the weight loss. So now you combine basically those two.
But you can't go get metformin if you don't have a glucose that's out of balance.
That's now you're getting, now you're making, you're having common
sense. No, all right.
So, it's going to get around that where now it's not going to be metformin, it's going to be weight loss. So weight loss, you know, obesity is now considered a disease. I mean, if you watched Oprah's, you know, special on primetime TV, I mean, this is why we're doing what we're doing. We just got to wake everybody up a little bit that there's no free lunch here. There never will be. And you're going to have all these effects downstream, not today, not tomorrow, but 2, 3, 4, 5 years down the road on top of breaking the bank because it costs $1,000 to $1,500 a month. So who qualifies for it? Pretty much everybody. Anybody over has a BMI of 25, 26%, which is most of our population. So now that's where the dilemma comes in, who's going to pay for this? But we're going to pay for it in a lot of ways, including we're going to have bad health. So I just wanted to kind of jump into that real quickly because it's out there. I was talking to a guy yesterday. He goes, hey, have you heard about an Ozempic face? And I'm like, yeah, you know, that's what's going to happen because when you take these medications, these GLP-1 medications, you're going to lose muscle. And as we age, we don't want to lose muscle. And that's the big one, gut paralysis and muscle. So I just want to start with that. But I really want to help, you know, let's just go back to the basic things. This is why we have the Know Your Numbers handout. And you just take that to your doctor and print it right off our website and give it to them and say, hey, this is, I need to start with these baseline numbers. And then, as you mentioned at the very beginning, is understanding your risk. Because that's the challenge. Like, I don't know my risk. So why am I being put on a medication when I don't really even understand my risk?
Okay, two things. Let's start with risk, and we'll end with, again, at if you're 35, 30, 25, 37, 45, and you, this might be the first time you get your numbers checked. I think there's a missing conversation happening to what numbers should I know to thrive? Maybe you've heard of an executive physical. You want to know these critical numbers for these executives that are responsible for a lot of people. But what about just like the everyday person, man or woman, who wants to say, hey, are my numbers in the area to thrive? Are they in the functioning state? We've talked about this before between function and medicine. Unfortunately, medicine is all about mitigating risk, when functional medicine is all about, are you functioning like you're capable? So that's like the difference between, do you have a gut infection, or are you digesting food? One's going to be very medical. You can test for the infection. Hey, nothing's wrong. You're fine. See you later. Versus, I've had IBS and constipation and diarrhea, and something's not right, but the doctor keeps saying I'm fine. So let's start with risk today. What are some critical things that everyone should know to determine risk, what their risk is? I think people are scared of cancer. They're scared of heart disease. What else are people scared? Brain disease.
The first thing we talk about is decoding your health. Your body's talking back to you. So you start listening to the body. Because if you look, I got acid reflux, I just take a Tums, or I take Prilosec, or maybe I take Nexium. But the body's going to talk back to you that way. Is my blood pressure too high? Is my resting heart rate too high? What's my sleep like? What's my gum health, eye health? That's a whole other equation, nothing to do with blood work. But when we start going down the medication path, now we're getting into, like, I had a gentleman I talked to the other day. He was calling me about some of his numbers. And one of the things he was talking to me about is he had a calcium score, which looked at his risk for having a heart attack. And he had a brother that passed away at 35 of a heart attack.
Jeez.
So I said, okay, so write down the top of your paper, what is your risk? And so he's on a cholesterol med and this and that. But I started asking him other questions, and I'm like, okay, your calcium scores, it's not super low, but it's not extremely high. But your inflammation marker's high, but you don't know your homocysteine. You don't know your testosterone level. You don't know a lot of these things. So we're probably not seeing the full picture.
How old is he?
65. So the question is always going back to at the very beginning, understanding what your risk is.
Does he have room to improve in his lifestyle?
Oh, everybody has room to improve. Yeah, so his sleep is way off. So if you're not getting enough sleep, we know right now heart disease is like, so back to the big question, they're not going to talk to you about your sleep. But if you're not sleeping, that's one of the, we now know if you're not sleeping, your risk goes way up for having a heart attack. So that's where you have to start looking at the whole thing. What are the big things? The big things is breathing, sleeping, hydration, you know, all these things you can do. How much do you move? And then understanding your portfolio, which is your, like you said, why would you want to know these numbers when you're 35? Because you want to know how you're,
thriving. We'll talk about that in part two here. But from a risk standpoint, he's probably getting some expert advice.
Yeah. He needs to get it from the cardiologist. So the first big risk factor is you have to understand your cholesterol portfolio. And what do I mean by that? Almost everybody I talk to, if I ask them a question, is cholesterol good or bad? And they'll say, well, yeah, I want to lower it. And now the new research is that you need to have your LDL, which is part of the cholesterol portfolio, under 50. I mean, that's just, it's ridiculous. Step number one is you have to understand your cholesterol balance. Cholesterol to total to your HDL ratio, that's a big number. If you're going to write something down, that's what you write down, cholesterol to HDL ratio. If my cholesterol is 200, my HDL is 50, I have a ratio of 4. For men, it should be 4.5 or less. For women, 3.5 or less. That's a risk. So you mean to tell me that I don't have to lower my cholesterol if my cholesterol... No, I'm here to tell you, cholesterol makes your sex hormones. It makes your stress hormones. You want to have your cholesterol higher in balance. That's the big word, is balance.
So if someone has a ratio imbalance, minimal risk, but if it's out of balance, what are some things that they should do?
The second piece you need to know on your cholesterol portfolio is triglyceride to HDL ratio. So if my triglycerides are 100, my HDL is 50, I have a ratio of 2.0. And you want that number to be 2.5 or less. So when you eat cleaner, it shows up right away with your triglycerides. So genetically, you might be a little bit higher on that cholesterol, but then your HDL might be at 70, and let's just say you're, for sake of conversation, your triglycerides are at 70, you have a ratio of 1. So that would be incredible. That's super healthy. So that's why you want to know those two balanced cholesterol to HDL ratio, triglyceride to HDL ratio, and that puts me in the bucket. If I'm in that bucket, I don't really need to go get a calcium score. I don't need to do this. I'm looking at all my risks.
That's not what the medical world does, though.
That's why we're having this podcast. So, and if it's out of balance, how do you do that? You start with omega-3 fats. You start looking at your diet. It's very easy. Not simple. I mean, it's simple, but it's not easy to bring it back into balance. But you can do this without medications. I've never had anybody not get off cholesterol lowering medication. Not necessary unless you had a heart attack and you're not willing to change your lifestyle. I say that really crystal clear now. I'm here to tell you, you don't need to be on a cholesterol lowering medication unless you've had a heart attack.
So some of the biggest risk factors for cardiovascular disease, obviously you want to get that cholesterol profile. Cholesterol to HDL ratio under, let's just call it under 4 to 3.5 or 4.5, depending on male, female.
Yep, get those numbers.
But the triglyceride to HDL is so simple. Again, under 2.5.
And again, that's not going to be discussed.
No, but you can do the calculation yourself if you're really trying to.
So simple.
But the two big other risk factors for cardiovascular disease are oxidation. And the biggest one is inflammation.
Correct.
So now, these are two blood tests, but people are never going to get it unless you ask. Maybe some will get the high sensitive CRP, but let's start with oxidation, or a test called homocysteine. Why is this such a risk factor, and why do you need to know it?
Because it's rust. So oxidation, rust, is one of the biggest factors for having a heart attack. And so if people don't know what their homocysteine level is, that number should be less than 10, they really don't know how much oxidation is going on. That's why when you bite into an apple, it turns brown because it's oxidizing. So when people eat more antioxidants, back to the keto diet, people take fruit out of their diet, or they're taking greens out or whatever things that oxidize, the oxidation levels in these high protein diets, homocysteine goes up because you have amino acids, that's raising that up. So again, folate is the number one way to lower homocysteine, and that's greens. And that's a big, big risk factor that I would say 99% of the people that I talked to initially have never had that test before.
We've all heard of antioxidants. They've done a good job from a marketing standpoint, but I don't think a lot of people think about oxidation when it comes to their health. And I don't think they even connect the dots that an antioxidant is really helping against oxidation. But if you put antioxidants on a box, everyone's like, oh, that must be healthy. Yet we don't know the other side of it. And even in our medical world, let's just say you have borderline cholesterol profile that needs to be under control. I would say 9 times out of 10, and closer to 10 out of 10, most people don't know their homocysteine.
So back to original story. This gentleman gets a calcium score, but he doesn't have the simple homocysteine test, and your brother died at a heart attack at 35, that would be the first test I get. So that's why we're having this conversation, because we do not know this stuff, and there's no medication for homocysteine.
Well, and then the other thing is, we're going to get to this in the thriving piece. Why wouldn't you want to know it at 35 so you can go in back and say, what is my tendency? So let's just say at 65 is the first time I've got blood work because I'm showing some risks or my doctor's worried about whatever. And they say, oh, this is high. What if it was high at 15 or 20 or 25 or 30? Wouldn't you say maybe this person just has a genetic tendency for higher cholesterol? Again, it's part of the puzzle piece that you got to put together, because not everybody is the same.
And back in the day, I would start seeing people on these high protein diets, because that was really popular in the 90s and 2000. I would see their homocysteine level go through the roof. But they didn't know that until nobody ever talked about it. They look good. They just look good. They look fit, but
I'm speaking truthfully. There's a lot of cardiologists that are eating a ketogenic diet.
Correct.
So again, we can't just go in there and expect that they're going to be our own health advocate. They're going to know everything in and out. They know a lot of the literature. They know, obviously, the science. They know how to fix the heart. We're talking in many aspects of you going in there with a little bit more control.
Yeah, but back to your original question is, what is your risk? And so if I'm on a keto diet, I'm going to have more acid, which leads to more inflammation.
You're going to have less antioxidants.
Which leads to more oxidation. I understand that they're trying to lower glucose levels, but again, we just need to know that. So back to your original, you need to know your cholesterol profile, those two numbers, that cholesterol to HDL, and don't think you need to have your LDL under. Again, it's back to the balance. The big word is balance, and triglyceride to HDL. And then you go into your glucose, obviously, is a big one. And your A1C, which we're talking about with Ozempic, because that tells you what the cells is. So now I look at, okay, how are my cells healthy? And if that number is starting to get out of whack, our cells aren't healthy. And then you go into your homocysteine, which you just mentioned, and oxidation, which leads us into the other big one, is called highly sensitive C-reactive protein, CRP. And that's an inflammation marker.
Yeah, and we're going to probably spend the last 20 minutes here talking about inflammation, because it's really what we're worried about, and it's what we have control over. It's a blessing and a curse. You know, if we didn't have any control, it'd be a bleak story, but we have a lot of control. And the first control we have is to know what it is. And we're talking about chronic. We're not talking about acute. And so you don't want to just do it every once in a while. You should know it again over time so that you can have some averages. And this is really the root cause for most disease and illness is inflammation. I was doing a little homework for the second part here that we'll get into in thriving, but if you want your gut to be flourishing, you need to have lower inflammation. If you have higher inflammation, the gut gets out of balance. If the gut gets out of balance, next thing you know, the hormones are out of balance. The hormones get out of balance. You might have some blood work that gets out of balance. And then if you go and you try to block that and say, just take a medication and it's just going to balance that number, we still haven't fixed the garden. We still haven't fixed the inflammation. So that's what's happening here is we're kind of, I would say, from our work, sometimes we're getting to these people at step 15 and we got to pull back the curtain. We got to kind of redo some behavior change. We got to do some lifestyle modifications. We got to then balance it with maybe some medications that have gone into the system.
Yeah, and again, medications can fit a role short term, but that's not fixing the problem. In most cases, they're fixing the symptom.
To me, the most alarming stat anyone needs to hear is the average 18-year-old or higher fills 12 prescriptions, not different, but 12 prescriptions a year.
I was at our place on Sunday, and I was watching, on Friday, and I'm up north, and I couldn't get the TV to work correctly downstairs, and I was watching the Today Show.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh my word, the amount of medications. And then they had brought this doctor on. He did a really good job about the top five questions to ask your doctors and stuff like that. But everything was about medications, and he had all these stats, and I'm like, holy cow, who's watching this stuff? But it is, it's just, it's alarming how many medications everybody's taken, and it doesn't have to be that way.
So know your numbers, know these numbers. These are critical numbers. Let's shift, which is the same conversation. Again, if you feel like you're going down this path, we're going to talk about how do we go down this other path.
Let's just talk about two more real quickly here. So once you get your homocysteine and your highly sensitive CRP, that number should be ideally, everybody should be less than one.
The high sensitive CRP.
Yeah. So you want to get the highly sensitive CRP, that number, and again, so I know your numbers. But like I said, I had a guy that had, he had 4.6 highly sensitive CRP. Whoa, what's going on here? So that and homocysteine and then your cholesterol profile, those are the big ones for heart and cancer. And then from there, one of the things you talked about is thriving was be testosterone for men and women. And that's a great indicator of how much rest you're getting, how you're aging. I love getting that number. So that's why when the gentleman that reached out to me about his heart, I wanted to go back to find out. I had to dig deep, not sleeping. I know his testosterone level's got to be in the toilet, but he doesn't know any of those numbers. But he would have known his risk if he would have had that test. And then the last one is you need to know your kidney function, and that's called eGFR, glomerular filtration rate. So if we're having kidney stones, we're having gout, we're having, you know, digestive health issues, the list goes on. We have to understand how the kidney's working. And again, we could spend all day on this conversation, but we need to start waking up on these basic things.
Yeah, I mean, so that's kind of like determining the risk. I'm really passionate about this because I know this, I talk about it all the time, but the system's not set up for this next part of this conversation. And it's, you go into your doctor and you say, I want to feel real good. That's not how it's set up. And so that's a whole different conversation, and it requires a little bit of different approach, mindset, philosophy. But I think if more people can think that way, even when you're in these years where maybe everyone's worried about mitigation and disease management, still thinking about this, what do I want my numbers to be? What do I want my testosterone to be? Not what do I just need to get it to? What do I want it to do to be functioning?
Yeah, thriving versus surviving.
So I was getting ready for this podcast, and you know, I would say we have men, women. I would say we have young, old, different ages, different generations. But I was trying to get a couple specific examples. We were talking about cholesterol, and again, we were talking about risk for cholesterol. I want to shift the conversation to thriving in cholesterol. And here's something interesting. If you have a total cholesterol under 150, it really impairs your ability to make sex hormones. We know that. I can't tell you how many people that if I was judging a book by its cover, I could kind of look at them and tell them that they probably have too low level of cholesterol, that come in and they brag about that their cholesterol is super low. They're very healthy. So this is something really interesting. If you're trying to thrive, you can't really thrive if your cholesterol is below 150 because you can't make these sex hormones.
So back to the original question is, what is cholesterol?
Cholesterol is the backbone to your steroidal hormones, or aka sex hormones. And that's why they're not a bad thing. They're an incredible thing.
And it makes every cell.
Makes the cell.
Cell membrane in the human body.
It helps to make and absorb vitamin D3. And so it's the number one medication in the world is to block that. So from sign a thriving standpoint, let's just say you're a 25-year-old female. And you're thinking, I don't feel great. I'm moody. Maybe my cycles are off. My cholesterol might be too low. You will not know your cholesterol at 25, at 30, unless you proactively go get it checked. But it might open up this huge puzzle that I see so many people struggling with, men and women. And so I went a little bit deeper. I said, okay, let's connect the dots to some of these things. If you've listened to the podcast for a long time, you've heard the story about my wife, first child, gets her cholesterol checked. Cholesterol went up 100 points. She's making a child. That's what it does. But let me connect these dots. For women that haven't gone through menopause, you have these menstrual cycles. And it's interesting, as you go through the cycle, estrogen goes up during ovulation. And for estrogen to go up, cholesterol must go up. So they're now understanding that there's some really new research out there that if you're getting your cholesterol checked, you probably should know where you are in that cycle, because it's going to connect the dots. So if you go in and the doctor says your cholesterol is elevated for some reason, maybe it was during ovulation and your estrogen is high. That's just something to think about. And when we think about estrogen, that's a sex hormone higher in women than men. Those are pieces that we need to connect. And so you need to consider the phase of the cycle to measure cholesterol. But I just want to talk about cholesterol. I'm seeing people not thriving more and more because their cholesterol is too low.
So let's talk about this for a second. So imagine this. I walk in, I get a blood test. My doctor says my cholesterol level is too high. I'm put on a cholesterol medication that lowers that. But here's the effect of this cholesterol-lowering medication. Let's just use men, for example, for just a second here. You're probably going to have a little bit more brain fog. You're probably not going to have great energy. You might have erectile dysfunction. You're going to have increased belly fat. You're not going to have a lot of energy. But here's the pill. I don't know if I'd be so excited to sign up for that plan. But most people, when they take these cholesterol-lowering medications, like you said, the most prescribed medication in the world, have never been, you know, consulted on that.
Let's take it to a 35-year-old woman who's having brain fog, low energy, muscle loss, low libido, maybe digestive issues, maybe their thyroid is not functioning properly. What if the answer is that we don't have some of the raw material to make this thing called cholesterol?
So why is that in the body? What does it do? It's not just in there because we want to lower it. It's not, we don't have heart disease because we have.
I've been spending a lot of time lately trying to educate people on things that I don't think they're paying attention to. You know, with social media, there's about, I think, 2 milliseconds of time that people really go into the weeds. But you hear about clean eating and digestive health and take probiotics and creatine and all these things, and you step back and say, what are we trying to do? What we're trying to do is we're trying to make the cells optimized. Mitochondria, nucleus. Okay, we do know the connection between your cholesterol and your cells go hand in hand. Your glucose and your cells go hand in hand. When we say, okay, what is happening if we need to make more sex hormones, thriving side, how do we make more cholesterol? Because cholesterol makes those sex hormones. I think we've been asking the wrong questions for so long. How do we lower cholesterol? Because we aren't thinking about thriving. No one would ever lower cholesterol if you're trying to thrive.
No.
You wouldn't try to make a child. You wouldn't try to get as strong as you want. You wouldn't try to get as fit or lean, or actually have the brain capacity. And so when you look at all these things, you say, okay, what's the biggest thing that we need to get control of or improve? It's inflammation. So it's like this closed, it's this closed loop, cholesterol, inflammation, oxidation, and they don't just work in isolation.
Right.
The gut doesn't work in isolation of the blood. The brain doesn't do things that the body doesn't do. It's all working together. And so when you think about all of these numbers, and again, one of the broken records is, why would something like omega-3 fats be so critical for our health, yet 95% of us are not having the saturation of omega-3s in our blood that we should? it's the same conversation. In some people, maybe in the younger population, their cholesterol is too low because they're deficient in this nutrient that makes and balances cholesterol. Or in this population that's got higher risk, their inflammation is too high and their cholesterol is out of balance. And that's why, to me, as I was thinking about this conversation, you know, one of the things that I'm really passionate about is, how do you motivate somebody to take an action that it's not based on a risk or a problem that they have? Because we talk about self-awareness a lot. If you don't know that the problem exists, it's really hard to change it, right?
Preventive things are, people are, don't really pay attention to their blood pressure until it's a problem. Or they don't pay attention to their cholesterol until the doctor says your cholesterol.
So here's I'm putting the flag today. I think everybody should know their cholesterol. So for example, let's just say I've been struggling with ADHD. I would want to know what your cholesterol is. Because if your hormones are not where they need to be, and when you think about a hormone, hormones help to control how cells and organs function. So hormones help to control how cells and organs function, the entire body. And we know cholesterol makes my sex hormones. Why wouldn't I know that?
It's the top of the pyramid.
So that's the point today is, I think we've been going about know your numbers from the risk side, and we're happy to talk about that. We'll continue to talk about it. I think you should know your numbers so that you can function correctly.
So one of the things in the Know Your Numbers handout, when I sit down with people, I write in their goals. So back to thriving. And so it's shocking to many of our clients that I want them to raise their cholesterol. They don't like what I go, your balance is, but let's raise it. Let's bump it up. What do we, you know, blah, 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 blah. And then from there, again, what should their homocysteine be? We want that number to be this. What should their CRP be? Back to your heart. I cannot tell you how many people are resting heart rate. This is nothing new blood work, but that's a risk. I want your resting heart rate. If you're 50 years old, that number should be under 60. In medical world, it's called bradycardic. If you went into your doctor's office and your resting heart rate's under 60, they put down the term bradycardic, means low resting heart rate.
When did you go to school?
Back in the early 80s.
So I think it's time we change some of these things. It's bradycardic. We want more people to be bradycardic because it means that they're fit.
If they're bradycardic because they have a higher stroke volume, and the stroke volume is the contraction of the heart. So when I sit down with clients, I say,
but a long time ago when they came up with that, what are they worried about? They're worried about
passing out.
Mr. and Mrs. Havisham, yeah, that can't go up the flight of stairs.
They don't have a strong enough stroke volume. So when you put low resting heart rate with low stroke volume, it's a disaster. That's how we die. That's how we go into VFib or whatever.
So a healthy person that's been exercising.
So again, back to my conversation, what is your resting heart rate? I don't know. What do you mean to know? It's one of the biggest things you need to know. Because if your stress levels are high, you're not sleeping, your resting heart rate's going to be high. So when I used to compete in bodybuilding, I always know when I was overtraining, my resting heart rate would start to climb. So resting heart rate's one of the greatest indicators of how healthy a person is. And if your resting heart rate's in the 50s or maybe even the 40s, and you are functioning, you don't have any symptoms per se, you're not lightheaded all the time, and same thing with your blood pressure and your breath, I don't even need to do these numbers. These numbers are probably going to be really good. So back to the heart, if the person has a really good resting heart rate, good stroke volume, they have greater cardiac output, the breathing is good, they don't have a lot of inflammation, away we go. So, but how do we not know that? I mean, I asked this guy coming in, he's seen his cardiologist. That would be the first thing if I'm a cardiologist. Look at your resting heart rate. Look at your stroke volume. Look at your blood pressure. You know, it's all these basic things. And then from there, we start getting into your blood work.
Yeah. So again, I think there's the thriving piece to me really excites me for everybody. It's the function. It's the...
Like if you were sitting down and you said, hey, my resting heart rate's at 45. I'm like, This cat's thriving.
Yeah, I want a 45. I want under 10 breaths per minute. I want a blood pressure 120 over something like 70, 65.
Because if you're resting heart rate, just use that as one tool, then I know your sympathetic nervous system isn't going. That's your stress button. That thing's more relaxed. This guy's pretty chill. His blood pressure is lower. Her blood pressure
is lower. My testosterone's, high. My cholesterol is supporting that testosterone that I want high. My glucose is under 87. My cells are very, sensitive. They're responding. They're flourishing.
Yes.
My thyroid, all these things. This is about function. And we now know a lot about functional medicine is not new. I think we have to go in with a functional mind and say, we know about microbiome now and we know about gut bacteria, but here's something, again, back to the basics. Inflammation leads to poor gut health. Inflammation reduces microbiome health. Inflammation leads to hormonal imbalances because the body can't communicate the right way. Remember, hormones help cells and organs function. If your gut and your microbiome, this thing works that same way. And as I was doing the research for the cholesterol with the estrogen, inflammation also leads to estrogen dominance. Again, they all have this interconnection.
Well, it's okay. So you go to Carnegie Hall, you listen to this amazing orchestra, you decide to take the violins out. You take out the tuba, you take out a couple horns, everything starts to be out of balance. So that's what we have to understand. And whether it's Ozempic or a statin med, it's everything is in isolation, which we're not looking at the whole entire system.
Autoimmune drugs.
Yes. So again, that's why we
hormonal
start out
therapy.
With rest, and then we move to the eating and the moving. And the tagline on the book is you have the power to feel your best, which that's what we're talking about is how do you get people to feel better? But just because your cholesterol level is low, you said it right at the beginning.
No, it's actually... I say this from stage.
It's not going to be good.
I say this from stage every time. Mark my words, in the next month to 5 years, we're going to talk about we have an epidemic level of too low level of cholesterol.
And what happens as we, all of us end our life, cholesterol will be in the toilet.
Yeah.
The beginning of life, you're talking about Holly, and as you're making new life, cholesterol goes up. What is that? Why is that? Because it makes life. That's the first thing I tell people.
Oh, and here, by the way, cholesterol also makes this thing called coenzyme Q10, which is the most powerful antioxidant in the body. It's like, it's so beautifully
designed.
Connected,
yes.
That we come in there with like a axe and we try to chop this thing down. Like this, this tree has this growth and you chop the limb down versus that soil looks horrible. It hasn't had any water. Yeah. The roots are kind of exposed. Let's bury those roots a little bit. So that's the message today. I think the takeaway message, if you're listening, you should know, let's just start with a simple number. You should know your cholesterol at 30 years old,
mm-hmm.
at 95 years old. And if it's lower than 150, we are not going to be thriving. Let's and if go. It's above what people say is high risk, you got to know those numbers
from the
ratio.
So let's go back for a second, because I just had a consulting session with a young man, and I said the first thing you need to do is get a primary care doctor and somebody you can communicate and that you can get these numbers. You just have to have, you don't have to see him, you have to have access to that. And then you go in there, be more prepared. That's where you want to begin to get these numbers, to see where you are, to create this thriving mentality. And then you have this. I mean, you interviewed me years ago and you said, if you could go back in time, what would you do differently? And I said, well, I got my numbers when I was 20. Then I could compare them when I'm 30 and 40 and all the way up. So it's just a way to help you have that awareness of what things are going. And then again, we also have this Your Health Keeps Score. So if you're interested in this, just shoot us an email and we'll send that out to you. That's not on our website right now, but we'll move it to the website. But we also have a new Know Your Numbers that has uric acid, a couple updated things on there. So if you haven't done this in a while, go to our website and go to the downloads and you'll see the Know Your Numbers handout.
And so maybe one of the questions is, I don't want to pay for this out of pocket. These are not expensive things we're talking about. They actually happen when you ask better questions. So the same blood that you can test your cholesterol with is the same blood that they can do the homocysteine and CRP.
Yeah, you get 5 vials of blood if you get it all. But again, back to, I need to know prevention. Again, we've talked about this forever. Get ahead of this thing. Get ahead of it. So people...
And I like the word prevention. I think, why wouldn't we want to thrive?
Thrive, yes.
Which thriving tends to prevent things.
Again, you want to have the life you want to lead and do the stuff you want to do. And, you know, again, that's why we're having this conversation, because we have this conversation a lot, but it really gets back to, I'm always having the same thing, that I want to lower my cholesterol. No, you don't. I don't know what my homocysteine is. I don't know what my CRP is. I don't know my testosterone for both men and women. I don't know my GFR. You need to understand what your risk is, and you can't be on these medications, everybody, if you don't know your risk. Why am I on a medication if I don't even know what my risk is?
So as we wrap this up, I think the takeaway is, get in the game. You know, risk management is critical, but thriving to me is that extra gear that we all have the opportunity to do.
And if you struggle with some of this stuff, shoot us an email.
Yeah, we're here.
We're here. The Rest, Eat, Move book, chapter 30, 31 in the book, our podcast. We're here to help you any way we can.
Have a great day, and we'll see you again next time.